Neutron. Retron.
Said he's gone from being a walrus to being a false certainty.
Good morning.
Morning.
Got a question for you.
Okay.
I have this desktop computer that has Windows 10 on it, and you can set up a separate partition and put Linux on those and run Linux if you want to, right?
Yeah, probably depends on how much drive space you've got,
Yeah, right.
but yeah, usually.
How much drive space does the Linux take up there?
That little crap top I've got has a 64 gig flash drive, and I've got Linux in about 30 of it. So it depends on what you want to do and how much stuff you want to synchronize.
Well, I was just going to put Linux on it. So we're going to do that. We just set up a separate partition and then copy the.
I mean, I would just wipe out Windows.
Well,
But
I don't.
how big is the drive that's in there, and how much is Windows using on it?
I really don't know because somebody gave me this thing a couple of months ago and I haven't ever even turned it
Whoa.
on. That's kind of the questions. Do you happen to have that with you right now, that one you got?
The
Black Mountain?
booting Linux Mint?
Yeah.
Yes, always.
Would it be possible to put a copy of it on this?
Yep. You want it as a booting Ventoy drive? Okay. Yeah, that's easy.
Thinking that'll be plenty of space on that thing. You want me to get the other one?
Yeah, Ventoy is an amazing piece of software. More people should use it.
Ventoy, B.
Ventoy.
V-E-N-T-O-Y.
I'll show you.
All right.
Mind you're with us.
Oh, no.
Your pseudo.
Oh,
I
by the way, to shell.
Yeah. We could say you're born again.
Or which one?
This is a neat little drive. Verbatim? I have to look into one of those.
Now, Micro Center had it on sale over $10 on it.
Okay, so it's a store and go. There's nothing on it. We'll leave that as it is. And let me check real quick and see if we're the latest version of Ventoy. I think I am, but things change.
Ever since.
I have a work laptop like that. I tell it to shut down, put it in the bag, and
Yeah.
2 hours later, the bag's on fire.
Well, it's actually not a laptop. I'm just what it takes to set
oh,
this
yeah.
all up. You know, is it the same one?
No, no, no. This is a Nook. This is just a tiny desktop.
Yeah.
And look at that. They updated Ventoy. I had 1.1.10. They're up to 1.1.12.
Is that a K11?
It's an i8.
Oh, it's an actual Intel NUC.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a story behind this. A long time ago, a friend of mine wanted to build a robot, basically a table that would follow him around and carry stuff. And and he was looking at vision stuff and he asked me, what would you run that on? I'm like, well, I do Intel hardware just because I'm familiar with it.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, this was it's an i7 8665 or something.
Okay.
At the time, it was pretty high performance. It was about
seven years ago.
It was about $700.
Oh yeah.
And he hands me a wad of cash and says, "Go buy some." Okay. Oh, and I want this guy in California and this guy in Illinois and this guy to be able to log into it. I'm like, okay. So I took it to work. I opened up a port to it, put it on its own little private VLAN. I said, there, everybody has access. I hooked up a couple of cameras with a sheet of QR codes available to it.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody ever logged into it, not once.
Oh, man.
And after
interest in the hobby, I guess it was, or
I have no idea. But after about 2.5 years of it sitting on my desk, everybody moved. And I called Mike. I'm like, dude, I've got this thing sitting here. He's like, just throw it out. Okay, will do. And I've been using it since. It is surprisingly strong. I've upped it to at least 16 gigs, maybe 32. That download.
There's your $700 right there.
Well, today.
These days, yeah. This ain't just, I just bought this. This is a new computer. It's only 16 gigs in it. That's what it
is. Yeah.
It's not LP. It's at least it's, you know, at least it's expandable.
What is this? Yeah, I got 32 in there. Two matched 16 gig, pretty fast SODIMMs.
Yeah.
I also, the only other, when we got it, it had a pair of fours, and I put in the pair of 16s. I also added a spinning hard drive. It's got a 2 or 3 terabyte spinning drive on top of the NVMe.
You were able to put a fist. Wow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a compact little guy.
Yeah.
And it is amazing how little power it draws. I'm pretty impressed with it, honestly.
Well, I bought this little mini guy because I wanted to have something that would take up less space and use less power. So I really sympathize with that.
So that says Ventoy 1.10. What? Does not start? Oh, it's in progress. Holy crap. Why is that taking so long? Okay.
Well, slow network.
Shouldn't be too bad. I used to love SourceForge. Now, not so much. Hey, Jonathan, how you doing?
Sorry about that. Hello. All right.
Oh, not the voices in your head or
constantly. Let's turn the volume up a little bit here.
Love your shirt. Not really nice. Appreciate the humor.
Highway to shell. How bizarre. I'm trying to figure out. Ah, there we go. Sharing. Desktop one. So I just downloaded Ventoy. We're going to install it here. Oh, that's right there in the middle. Isn't that helpful? Yeah, good enough.
Inventory command.
Yeah, it's Midnight Commander. It
Oh.
is a clone of Norton
Yeah.
Commander, and it is absolutely amazing. Like that. One of my all-time favorite pieces of software.
I was an Xtreme fan back in the day, which I think is similar to Norton Commander.
What does Norton Commander do?
This, yeah.
That.
It's an old DOS program for doing file management.
Okay.
It's the Norton Utilities
That
from,
looks familiar.
yeah. Hello. Yeah, Midnight Commander is so close to a clone of it,
Yeah.
but it's got like an editor. If you're editing a bin file, it automatically shells into
So it has
X,
to.
exit. Yeah. Oh yeah. It is pretty impressive.
Yeah.
I don't even remember the name of this program.
Midnight Commander.
Oh, this has been my community. It looks like some others.
It looks like Norton Commander.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I
NC.
guess.
MCU is a clone of NC.
Gotcha. Well, maybe I'll sit up here so I can read the damn screen.
Yeah, that is the problem with sitting back in the cheap seats.
Yeah.
Well, turn those sideways and
Yeah,
just
I
here.
know how to do that.
Okay.
I figured if it was if you didn't have a big agenda, then I would get some help with from the group with my.
Okay, you can do that.
Of course, the purpose of any Linux machine is to run Windows 7.
You just put in, oh, I guess, yeah, you put in the Twister UI. It's not really running Windows 7, but it'll put a theme, a Windows theme on top of,
Yeah, but it's my sole reason for running for wanting to run Windows 7. Is to have access to software that I have not been able to port to Windows 10.
I've
Is it
got
six? Is it
one of those
16-bit
too.
software? Probably.
Then
And
you
probably
should,
32-bit software.
if it's 32-bit software, you should be able to port that. You should be able to put that on 10.
Yeah, I actually made
But
so I have the
16-bit, you got to load 10 32-bit.
yeah. But I have an old Windows 7 box. That one day will die.
I
As
just
they
had to make one
do.
again. I had to make one again to get some scanner. I was trying to recover a Kodak scanner software with the dongles and everything. I had everything you need. You cannot get there from here because it is hard-coded in the first startup of the program. It has to get registered online. And the back-end servers haven't been there for over 8 years.
Oh,
AI would not help me bypass or falsify that at all. It's one of the, so I ended up finding some alternative softwares that would do what it did.
I recently learned about a website or an organization called Mass Graves.
Yeah.
I wonder if they might.
And I found a bunch of drive. I found a bunch of drivers in the Internet Archive, the Wayback Machine. Then I mean, I loaded 10 different codec packages of the same software that were designed for three different printers or scanners.
Yeah. Is this a film scanner?
Yeah, no. It does everything. It was a commercial grade, high speed documents and not film. It could do film, but mostly slides.
But still, I mean, if you
And
get
an
an entire
entire it was
printer.
like a high speed dock scanner and an entire glass bed flatbed scanner that did not run unless this was connected because it was considered an accessory and the glass bed of this one.
Yeah.
So the whole thing was all tied together, multiple dongles required for the software, and it was designed for Windows 7. So I started out loading 7, cloned it a few times. I went back to start, I can't tell you how many times. I must have spent over 40 hours at the keyboard trying to get this thing to run.
Never did.
And
It's a shame if
I
it's.
told the business owner, I said, it'd be cheaper to just buy new scanners. He's like, I want to get this built. I said, fine. So I ended up capping my labor at 2 grand.
Yeah.
So you got a bill for under 2,500, but you got something that was working and did all
Oh,
of the
okay.
major functions. Oh yeah, just getting drivers for these things was a pain in the ass.
Yeah. But you were able to get by the registration.
No.
Oh, you weren't. Okay. How
No,
many?
I got drivers, and there was a couple little other utilities, and there's a couple workarounds. There's a utility to down to for the codec that's in the system that was in the tray, and I could run scans with the codec drivers
Yeah.
with or with the codec software. But it was the software package that was like Codec Shoebox. I don't know if anyone remembers that. Like when you got a Codec CD, you get this program with it. And that was apparently something that was Codec Shoebox. And then there was another, and then there was functions in the Codec scanner software, the main package that did orientation and reorientation and clean up stuff that they have to do manually now.
So they used to have a Windows 7 box, and it died.
It'd been upgraded through 10 and it actually got malware.
Oh my.
And then somebody just wiped it and redid it.
Oh, so they lost whatever key they had, because you
They
could
lost it.
probably.
Yeah, they lost everything they had.
Oh man.
We had, when I worked at the law office, we had a couple of systems that had that sort of thing going on. And I had a booting CD that you boot off the machine, it got the, all of our stuff was Dell. It got the Dell ID and it wrote it to a NAS. As a it booted CloneZilla and made a CloneZilla disk image of the machine with the name on the NAS being the
Name it.
serial number for the
Oh,
machine.
okay. You did that
So you
at
could
install
recover.
at first installation then, so that you
Well,
could.
after everything was working, if everything
Yeah.
was working and they
Yeah,
were
you'd want
getting
to
ready
bring
to
them
make
together
a
to your
change, we'll
image.
make a backup.
Yeah.
Go ahead and try your change. If it worked, we'll make another backup. Because you only had one backup. It was the overwrite of the last one.
Yeah.
I could have fixed that, but drives were
Not as
expensive.
cheap.
Yeah.
Right. That would have been nice. What I did do is I ended up putting an SSD in this thing because it had a spinning drive.
Oh, I have.
It was a Dell Precision workstation that still had a spinning drive.
This is the machine that was running your scanner, the scanner.
Yeah, so I put in a 250 SSD. It wasn't using a whole lot of space, just that's what was came of it. So I put in a 250, left the big drive in it, and I didn't do the CloneZilla, but I did something similar. I did oh crap. I have
That's
it
an interesting
before.
name of software.
Yeah.
It was
I have
another
that
clone of the
software.
software. So I cloned an image of the drive to the terabyte drive, and then I just made the rest of the drive and took away the drive letters, made the rest of the drive the D drive for the system so they can still have all the space they want and need.
but they've got a working backup of the system. Macrium.
Oh, yeah.
I love Macrium.
We used Macrium. We used...
There was one that used to make an image that was like a single file.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't Clonezilla.
Clonezilla can. It defaults to making images that'll fit on DVDs.
Okay.
So you can have like this 5 DVD set is an install for a machine. It intentionally tries to stay under that 4 gig limit that shows up so frequently.
So you don't need special DVDs.
Or... Right.
Or
a special OS.
Right.
Or a special OS, because it hasn't changed much since Windows XP, and you couldn't have a single file that was over 4 gigs,
right?
Or 3.8 or some number, I don't know. So they try to stay inside of that. But yeah, you can tell Clonezilla to do a single image. I'm trying to remember what we were using for a while. We had something that was amazingly fast. It just evades me. It was a Linux distribution that was designed to look like you're just running Windows XP to do a backup. It was neat. It was actually kind of pretty. And another one that we used a lot, this was going back years and years, was Ghost. Norton.
Oh, well, God.
I used that. Yeah.
You used to use Ghost 1.0 and Ghost 2.0.
Ghost from Ghost Corporation out of Australia.
Yes.
And
before it was Norton.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
God,
Norton
yeah.
bought it from Ghost
yeah.
at about version 3.
Yeah.
But yeah, Ghost 1.
I used it back in 94.
Yeah.
And I used to re-image all the classrooms at the Ingram Micro Tech Center,
mm-hmm.
Tech Education Center. I have images of all the class servers and the class machines.
Yep.
And I had a NetWare floppy disk. I had it all on floppy.
Yeah.
I had a network floppy disk that invoked Ghost, and it would go to my server that had all my Ghost images for each class, just by names, like workstation, just go through and do them all.
Mm-hmm.
To reset a class for each week.
Oh, well. You have a drum.
Found this at a thrift store. They want to tell me what it might be.
I'm 99% certain that the sand art. You put a little bit of sand in it, and yeah, it looks like it's got some sand there. You put a steel ball bearing on it. One motor drives it around, one motor drives it in and out, and you can give it a math formula, and it draws sand darting.
Like a spirograph or something like
yeah.
that?
I had no idea.
I actually wanted to make one of those for a while. So that one was driven by an Arduino, it looks like. You're missing the driver boards for those servos. They use a little, oh shit, what is it? 5420 8 transistor array, I think, that they set up as an H bridge. What you looking for?
IP address of the gateway.
Oh, I don't know. Hold on.
Cool. The other membrane is thicker than I thought it would.
Yeah, it's a piece of plastic. It's yeah. hopefully to keep sand in.
Yeah.
They don't.
I just have no idea.
So the gateway here is 10.202.0.1.
Okay.
But you need to actually sign into the network. Go to http://example.com, and it'll bring up their sign-in page. It doesn't work well with HTTPS. It gives you all sorts of, oh, this one
worked. But yeah,
it's
yeah, they're not going to bother with that.
It's pretty
so
easy. Right.
Well,
what is that? The automatic tambourine?
No, it's a sand art thing. It puts some time and effort and money into this. Those chains are relatively expensive, bead chain. They bought those at a size. That had to have been a kit that somebody put together.
This is a 3D print.
I don't think it is. I mean, it might have been, but that was a kit somebody bought.
I found it at Goodwill Outlet. And I got no idea what this thing is, but
10-202-01.
That was nifty. I just got a
you're not going to be able to get out until you open up a few things browser like the, and
sleds for a Dell server.
And log and
so except instead of spending $20 a piece online on eBay somewhere for them or whatever. I can just print they just don't lock
their browser.
Okay. You should already
a few other little parts for various machines.
Anything was automatic at all.
I'm in the process of making an entire bucket of little green army for my brother for Christmas. There's a few other things that are like totally useless stuff that I'm making with it, but it's also I'm learning a lot about how to do 3D printing in the process.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, you don't see.
So I'm just having a blast with this thing.
Yeah,
I had a Bob one. You come years ago. Reality.
You know what? I'm not going to mess with it because that's a
it's very important. Still online and still never set it up. It was still in my basement. You know, because it was like a rector set, right? We had to sit there, so I never really had a place
this
for
is
it.
A virtual
and spray everything out and then build it.
Proxmox.
Just
the less okay.
About it.
And I don't want to mess with them. I try and
well, we're not going to
I've got really good experience with this.
Okay.
So,
they have
that's a thing I'm going to do
with the
subject on. At home,
with like
I run
colors
XCP-NG. I'm not a big fan
it's
of
all on sale. It's
in XCP-NG,
generation of
USB devices.
And it was only about twice as much.
Here's a table of USB devices. Click it. That goes to this VM now.
Which was like really cheap. It was like $200.
Got a Raspberry Pi.
So this was $550 Microsoft. Still it.
USB ports. So this Pi exports the ports to the
NG. You don't have to know how to build a car to drive a car.
But now anywhere I put that Pi, I can hook up a USB device and get it to a
VM. The first one I got was building a car.
It's sweet.
This one's driving a car. I was having a great
zero time. Until now. I have zero experience with VMs, and so part of the reason for bringing this here is just to get the wisdom of the crowd. So,
I don't have a lot of experience with anything except XCPNG.
What did you say the name of that was?
XC.
Oh, X.
Charlie. Yeah, so XCP.
Oh, XTP. Okay.
C is in Charlie.
Oh, XTC.
Xavier Charlie Paul was a product. Xavier
Charlie Paul.
Thank you.
Was a product of Cisco. And it was the Zen Cisco paravirtualization system.
Hmm.
Zen is an open source project. Cisco added their toys to it and made a lot of money. They ran off of very expensive Cisco hardware.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't charge anything for the software. And it's very similar to VMware. I mean, very, very similar.
Okay.
So it's similar enough that you can map a VMware share. If you do NFS shares that you're running your VMware
mm-hmm.
systems off of, you can map that same NFS share and select the thing in a browser and say import that. And 20 minutes later, if that, it's running an XCP. It really, really, really irritates me that where I work, they went from VMware to OpenStack because OpenStack just doesn't work right yet. It's close, and we're dumping enough money into it that we'll get it. But holy crap, XCP was already there.
Where because of Broadcom and all that.
Yeah, so I just read this as a anecdote. Somebody from Reddit, they have two physical servers running eight VMs, their bill from VMware to continue those two physical servers and eight VMs was $14,000 a year. XCP, it would have been closer to half that. And XCP-NG, which stands for next generation or new generation, I don't know, is an open source spin on it and it would have been free. XCP-NG is impressive in what it can do and how similar it is to VMware. The only failing it has is it uses VNC as your viewport into a virtual machine and it's laggy.
If you're not gaming, is it laggy?
Well, so if you're gaming,
you pass through
the GPU. You can do different things. Yeah, you can pass through the GPU and you can get video out on the actual network card instead of doing a VNC session to it. But you mean I don't. So this is a SAN table. And you can do neat things. And here it's running there. Can we make that go big?
Probably. So it just vibrates the
No. It's got two motors.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll pass this around because not everybody has seen it. So one motor drives this table underneath around. One motor drives a magnet on the table in and out.
Uh-huh.
So you spin one motor and the ball goes in a circle. You spin the other motor and it goes back and forth.
Sort of like
things so
like
it's not so, like a tambourine.
So it's a wavy line. That's what I said. Is that
like beam deflection on an oscilloscope?
Yes. In
LaSalle in a circle
mode.
In polar coordinates.
In LaSalle mode.
Yeah, in LaSalle. Right. Yeah. Right.
I don't think the J is pronounced, but I'm not certain.
What's that?
I don't think the J is pronounced, but I'm not certain.
Who knows?
I've always pronounced it.
Really?
Okay. What? LaSalle. That sounds French.
I thought it was LaSalle.
I couldn't tell you where I first heard it, so I might have made it up.
But this is one of them. There are many. Holy crap, what tab am I in? Oh, well. Yeah. So this is MakerWorld. I'm not as happy with them as I am with Chris's setup.
For printables.
Yeah. But there are a lot of these.
I've been pulling stuff up. I just started 3D printing. And I've been pulling stuff up. It is so much fun.
I took a very utilitarian approach to 3D printing. I said, all right, I'm not gonna own a 3D printer.
You just want the library?
I'm gonna join the makerspace and use their 3D printer.
Yeah.
that's what I did. That's
what I did initially in my first couple of printing. It's like, no, and it got cheap enough that I bought one.
Yeah.
I now have four 3D printers.
I gave away my Creality.
Yeah. I have two Ender 3s, that one of which was given to me, one of which I actually paid for, not a lot. I've got a Prusa something, I don't know, i3s maybe. Oh, and I've got an old,
okay,
I don't even know what it is. It's got like a 5-inch square plate that I've never even plugged in. It's out in the garage in case I come across something that I actually need it for. Usually use the Enders because they're cheap, and if I break it, I don't care. The Prusa, I need to reload software on it because it's broken at the moment. Actually, it becoming broken was why I got the first Ender.
was really expensive. Let me buy a cheap one to break.
Yeah. Well, so the Prusa is twice as fast as the Ender,
So is this one.
And it has a slightly larger build volume, which would be handy. I've got things set up at the moment. On the Enders, I'm 3D printing 10-inch rack mount stuff, and I can't do a 2U plate on there. It's just not physically
large. You can't orient it a different way? Or
well, I have to do 1U at a 45-degree angle.
That's what I was about to say. Can you do it at an angle?
No, it's too big. It's 256 in any dimension, and it only goes to about 248 or so. And I can't make it smaller because then it won't fit in the frame. So I print everything at 1U. Like, well, here, that's one I can show you. Stuff I've been working on.
Well, I just got the bamboo one at Microcenter. And I'm just trying to figure, I'm figuring out what I'm doing, what to do and how to do it. And doing, actually I did, one thing that I found and did was, it's stupid. It's just a 5 1/4 inch drive bay cover, but they had special hooks to hold the custom rails mm-hmm. on the inside of the drive bay cover. And it's a super quiet case that was before quiet cases were a big deal. So it's kind of a, I guess, retro. Anyway, I found somebody had created a exactly what I needed online.
And so they need you did.
Yeah, and so I printed it, and it fit, but it was just really loose, so I increased. So then I'm like, well, how do I make this work? And start looking at the different controls.
Duct tape.
Oh, I already used duct tape for something. Yeah, so on that for something else, but...
always on the construction list.
Yeah.
100
and the bailing work.
I printed at 100.5% size and it fits perfect.
Wow.
We know how to do that math.
Yeah. Let's just goose it just a little. No, previously it was I've taken an old 3.5 inch to 5 1/4 inch, you know, mount to like a tape drive. Covered it with black duct tape, threw it in the slot.
So this is a screen mount for a weird little, I guess it's about a 3.5 by 8 inch display.
Okay.
1280 by 400, I think. And I mean, it's just a flat plate. There's nothing special about it, but
how long is it?
Huh?
How long? You said 256 centimeters? Or millimeters?
Millimeters, yeah. It's 10 inches edge to edge.
Can you print it diagonally? It's
probably 200 millimeters.
Yes, and if I print it diagonally, I can do 1U. But if it's 2U, then the corners stick out top and bottom.
gotcha.
I can only print 1U diagonally.
Can you print dovetail triangles into the thing so that you
can stamp two together? That never looks good. So what I did was, these are symmetric. I used two of them. I put them in adjacent slots, one upside down, and these are super glued across the back to hold the screen in place and gotcha. On the ends. So I print two of these. I end up with four of these pieces, and those glue.
They solidify everything.
Yeah.
Through the magic of making two of them.
They end up being U-shaped on the ends here.
Yeah.
And that holds the two plates together and keeps the screen from sliding left to right. And then two of them this way turn 90 degrees to hold it against the front. And it was really absolute happenstance that all worked out that well. I was going to just put four across the back and hope it didn't slide side to side. And then I'm like, oh, this just fits, because the inside dimension of the rail is like 8.2 inches. And it leaves like, sorry to mix numbers, it leaves about a half millimeter on each side with those U-shaped pieces side to side.
Wow.
But
you can add that with a bead of epoxy and just let that dry, right?
No. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I gotta
admit, I use thick super glue.
Mine says it does 256 by 256 by 256, but I keep things in the grid.
Yeah,
and it still comes up and it says
there's a thing in that you can't print on.
Yes, it still says you can't print this because you're blocking the print head or something.
Even with
so I gotta still read adjust it.
Run into that. Yeah.
And yeah, so I'm worried, but and like I said, I've got about this many in a baggie of little green army men. I'm making an entire bucket full for my brother for Christmas. Just in the spare time, I'm just like, run some more army men.
Yep.
Well, if you want to make stupid things just to practice with the thing, there's something very small, it takes very little material, and you can sell them like hotcakes.
What are those?
You know the way with the baseball caps, there's that little plastic?
Yeah.
Some of us have ginormous heads and have to wear
the space
uniform. And I buy an extender.
Oh.
Little plate that big with holes in it. What's it cost?
Yeah, it's got holes. And does it have any nubs also?
Yeah, it has
got to have nubs. Okay.
That can't cost much to make. As people who have to wear a hat will easily throw a buck at you. And once you know how to make them, it's like,
what? Close to just hardly anything, right? Just slip it in a 28 cent or a 78 cent.
I'd have to figure out what, I'd have to buy a whole reel of a different material because everything I have is called PLA, and that's a harder plastic. I think that one is
TPU.
That might be
that one. Yeah, I was TPU, which is softer and like a watch band.
It's not real flexible. At least I bought from two different vendors. They're not real flexible, but I mean, they don't need to be. I got a big ass round head. How far does it have to bend? You know?
So well, what I have doesn't bend. That would hurt your head, the back of your head. It would hurt the back of my head. But I know what you're talking about because, like, there have been times I remember when I actually, it's not stupid, but I remember when I went from the child size to the adult size hats. Because child size hats, they're much, you know, you get to that point, then you're like, okay, I guess I need a bigger hat.
Yeah.
But actually, I used to sell stuff at the stadium. Standard baseball hat is from 7 to 8, which is most people's head size. And each nub is 1/8. 7 and 8, 7 1/4, 7 3/8. That's what each nub is. When they're all lined up, that's 7. Now, you can get smaller by, you know,
so it's like a broad extender for a baseball cap.
Yeah, don't give me that image. I already deal with my 89-year-old mother. who has me help her shop for these things?
So if you're doing 3D modeling, specifically for 3D printing, you might want to look into OpenSCAD. It's CAD for people that get math.
I had the download that because I had got something that was in the SCAD and I needed it in STL and I didn't know I could use something called STEM. I'm learning that too. But so I downloaded the SCAD, but I haven't played it with it yet. Is it good for doing CAD?
I mean, I designed most of my stuff in OpenSCAD.
Okay.
Yeah, I used Tinkercad for a couple of things that
I used that once.
Tinkercad seems to be aimed at architects. Ancient history. I went to D. Russell Lee Vocational School.
Say what?
D. Russell Lee Vocational School in Hamilton in the 80s to learn architecture. Architectural drafter. I can't draw a fucking straight line. It was not for me. I almost failed and decided to just quit instead.
That's why you had those tables with the things on the strings.
Yeah, even with those, I couldn't draw a straight line.
He's the first year student because I remember.
You just got to put your pencil next to it.
Be able to draw.
You'd think that
straight line.
Press down on it at the same time.
You'd think that. So you've got to maintain some pressure against that bar, otherwise you go up. So you push down, and now you get over here. Oh, crap. And I just I swear.
Yeah, don't try to navigate on the high seas either, then.
No, that I can do.
Well, you got to use the rule that walks.
No, you just need the math. You don't need to draw your map. You just need to know where you're at.
Okay.
So anyway, this software, OpenSCAD, very simple. To draw this thing, I made a module called Screen. So here's the thing that I'm designing this for. It's a Wyze Coco 7.84-inch stretched bar LCD display. They use these things at Kroger, by the way, for advertising stuff.
On the end cap shelves?
Yeah. Well, those are real long. Those are actually projectors. But they use these for some other stuff. Anyway, they're relatively cheap. They're down to about $45
or so. Like those little TS screens on the shelves?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And the dimensions are 67.5 by 206 by 5.4. And it's 7.2 millimeters at the connector. OpenSCAD does everything in metric. So if you go by the absolute cheapest caliper at Harbor Freight, the plastic one, yeah, it measures in tenths of a millimeter, which is fine because your 3D printer is going to do much better.
Time.
Yeah, I've been using one for like 5 years now.
I've been thinking about getting one.
Cheapest plastic one is like $5.
That's cheap. And that's in my price range.
Yeah. It might be more now.
I think my caliper I got it at Wood, you know, it's like Woodcraft or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It was $10-$20. It wasn't five, and it wasn't prohibitively expensive, you know. So
I defined a module called Screen, and the blocks are other little modules. I think, whatever, how wide the rack is and how many
Do you have to type everything out for OpenSCAD, or is that just
you
draw it and then it outputs
this? No, you don't draw it. You put in the math to define the object.
So you do have to type everything out.
Yes.
So then you say this, I want...
AI works really well with OpenSCAD, though. I hate AI, and I've only used it once for anything in OpenSCAD, but it is surprisingly good. Claude is pretty decent with OpenSCAD. But yeah, if you want a hole in something, you define a cylinder, the diameter of the hole, and the thing that you want the hole in, and then you move the cylinder to where you want it, and then you difference your thing and the cylinder. And that's what this does. So the screen is centered on these four pink dots. I just made those pink by adding this pound sign in front of cylinder. I can make the entire thing. I just copied that 1U plate from something else.
Yeah, search and reapply.
Yeah. Yeah, and you can do that. So I didn't have to have the entire module for drawing the plate in here.
Uh-huh.
I could have had an OpenSCAD file called plate, and then include plate, and now just define the screen and subtract it from plate.
What's the overall project you're building the 10-inch rack for?
Just a 10-inch rack to play with.
Okay.
It'll have three hosts in it with i7, 8th gen, Intel, Dell, Microform Factor, little boxes. I've brought one or two of those here. I've got a CM3580.
This is better than my new stuff.
No. Well, I ain't throwing any of them out. I paid for most of them. I collect things over a long period of time, and I haven't bought much used compute stuff lately because holy crap. So I was looking at notes from the meeting. And at one point, this has been 3 years now, I brought in my little NAS. It's a 9-inch cube. It's got a N100 main board in it and five physical 3.5-inch spinning drives.
Home server, is it?
No, it's better. It's got four 2.5 gigabit Ethernet ports that go to a switch that joins those all together in a bridge. So it's 10 gig connectivity. I've got 8 terabyte drives in it. And I looked at the, and it's got two terabyte NVMe drives in it for fast storage. And I looked at the prices of that stuff. I got those NVMe drives at Micro Center for $30 a piece after tax. And it's 2 terabyte.
800.
Yeah. Wow. So, yeah, I'm not buying much now.
I took my, I got an M36, an original HP one, 6 1-terabyte drives and a USB port in the center of it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's got a little USB drive in it to run. I'm running TrueNAS on that.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to change one of the hard drives failed.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, holy crap. And I did it a few times because the first time I did it, it worked. But when you look at the interface, the console interface on the web,
mm-hmm.
it was named totally different. It stood out, the new replacement drive stood out. So it worked right in text console, text-based console,
yeah.
But in the web interface, it was totally misnamed and everything else. And
so
I didn't know if it was right or not.
Yeah, you can actually rename things relatively easily.
I did not do it the relatively easy way.
So all of my drives in my TrueNAS just show the last 4 digits for the serial numbers. I intentionally did that, and each drive has a 4-digit sticker.
I labeled all of my drives too.
Yeah. Yeah, I found out the hard way that you really need to label things because when you've got a machine that's in an office 400 miles away and you're walking a lawyer through replacing a drive.
Or you need the one that's got serial number, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, let me take them all out to see which one has that. But where does it go back again?
Yeah. And
I just picked up a machine where that's exactly what I did. I just labeled all the hard drives in the RAID.
What I was doing, I wasn't using TrueNAS in the attorney's offices. We just stuck a Linux box in every office. And I was using old Dell, I love Dell's, 7010 Optiplexes.
Uh-huh.
They've got room for 2 physical drives. And we did RAID 1. And I had literally piles of terabyte spinning drives because we replaced all of them with SSDs in the office. And personally, I think spinning drives last longer. I've got spinning, I picked up at work. So since we're closing down, they're putting Cadence out and filling up with stuff. And I walk by and I see this thing. It's a tablet from about 1992. Hmm. It's got Windows XP on it, a 1¾-inch spinning drive, still boots. The batteries are shot, obviously, but holy crap, it still boots. XP.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sounds like a monitor for your 10-inch rack.
It's a little too big. It's a big.
Sounds like a monitor for your next 14-inch rack.
It is quite a large tablet.
If you keep saying that, she's going to come over here and slap you.
Yeah, I'm just trying real hard to not listen.
Sorry, someone had to stand down for you.
I've actually recovered data from 30-year-old floppies. So mm-hmm. I think that I was concerned that the magnetic media wouldn't work. But I mean, I'm sure there's going to be some flaws as I go through the collection, but
so
yeah, I still got my 5¼-inch drive also for doing that and the cables and the controller.
So a floppy disk sitting on a shelf for 30 years or a spinning drive sitting there for 30 years is going to be far more recoverable than an SSD or an NVMe.
Recharged. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. The NVMe will lose everything in about a year and a half.
Just lying dormant on a shelf?
Yep. Because it doesn't get the charge.
It doesn't get the charge renewed.
I actually was surprised, pleasantly surprised that I had data on a thumb drive that was more old than that, and it wasn't corrupted. So I thought this would have been dead after, but I don't think you can rely on it being lasted long, or at least some of them seem to.
So you can't rely on them to last a car ride.
Yeah.
But
there might be a story behind that.
Yeah.
Not much of one.
Yeah, here's a good one.
Let's just put it this way. I had to download the photos from the camera again.
So this one I had nothing to do with. I didn't create this at all. This was somebody else. It's just a model of an RPI 4, Raspberry Pi 4.
Uh-huh.
So if you need to make a thing and have a space for a Pi 4,
then you just have to
exclude this from the thing.
Oh, how? You just put it in and say, create this, or you can
have this thing difference my thing from a Raspberry Pi.
Or you could build that and physically use it to mock up the space.
Yep. So, and this I downloaded off of Thingiverse, maybe ish. I tend to leave author information in. I don't know. But yeah, it's not a particularly good model. I mean, it doesn't show pins or anything. The network port doesn't have an opening in it. But if you're using it to exclude from another model, it's fine.
You don't need that stuff, yeah.
And it doesn't have solder pads on the bottom. Right. Worried about unpacking something.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, so, unless they thickened the board to compensate for that.
They didn't.
No.
It's very close.
Yeah.
A change I would make, these holes that are here,
mm-hmm.
instead of making those holes, I would have made those pins that are the proper clearance diameter for screws and have them stick up and down. So now when I exclude it from my model, it's got holes where I can put bolts. And I do that quite a bit. Let's see.
Any of the generics like the orange pies instead of the Raspberry pies?
Yeah, I've got some of the Intel had a line of Thinker boards. I forget.
Tinker?
Yeah, okay. I've got some of those. I've got an orange pie.
Chinese sites, orange pies top right.
Mm-hmm. Those are made by Friendly Elect. My CM3588. Aids, several of them are made by them, and they seem amazing.
Okay.
I had no issues there. So the CM3588, yeah, let's talk about that while we're on stuff. Not that well, I guess. These have gotten surprisingly expensive lately.
What is it?
Raspberry Pi's doubled in price.
Yeah. I have no idea who Waypon Dev is. They didn't build this. But the CM3588 is a 4 NVMe NAS board with a Orange Pi 4, effectively. This thing has an HDMI input. You can run from like a DVD player to the HDMI input and use it to record your Disney videos, in theory. I ran into a guy on
You get around DRM that way.
Yeah.
Nice.
It is.
I like the evil laugh.
It is slightly lossy. Not bad. It's not quite as good as a straight rip. but it ain't far from it. It gets those weird artifacts that HDMI get in motion, where you get the banding in solid color backgrounds. But that's the only thing I've noticed. So this comes with the power supply and a little USB to TTL serial adapter, which you really don't need. This thing has an SD card reader on it. You go to Friendly Alexa web page, you download Debian or Open Media Vault onto an SD card. You put it on there. The first time it boots, it sees it. It goes, I guess you want that here. And it copies it over to the flash storage that's on this thing and shuts down. You take out your drive, and now it does that thing. I have mine set up with just flat Debian, and they work very nicely as storage.
What's the little green connector in the upper left? It looks like a SAS.
The little tiny two-pin, that's an alternate power connector. Okay. If you've got those little green connectors with screw terminals, you can use that. You can power this off of a 12-volt power supply on the barrel jack. You can power it over USB-C with BD. It's a surprisingly versatile board. So there are a couple of hardware sales groups on Reddit. I'm a member of several of them. And some guy was selling these at $85 a piece. And if you bought more than one, $75. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay.
I'll take
three. I did. I bought one for $85 and got it. I'm like, whoa, this is pretty impressive. Give me two more. And he did. And he sold it to me for $75 and $65. So that they were 75 each. I'm like, dude, thank you. I didn't expect that. And I paid him with the one that starts with a V.
Venmo?
Yeah.
Oh, not Bitcoin.
No. I have nothing invested in any electronic thing. I accept that other people feel that a number can have value, but I don't. I'm disgruntled that you can't buy silver certificates anymore.
So I have a couple.
I have like $12 worth, some old $5 in singles.
Bunch of 1963 dimes.
Yeah. But so yeah, I've got one of these. And it's with everything on it, it's, I don't know, what, 13 millimeters thick, and I've got 40 millimeters for one U, 44.45. So it easily fits in one
U. Antenna track.
Yep. So this is one U. I've got, do I have my head? No, I don't.
So you're running Debian as your NAS, or are you running?
Yes. Because all I need is NFS exports. I don't need it to do fancy things.
You don't need ZFS. Or you say you did want ZFS, or is it not ZFS?
I don't. I'm running
NFS as opposed to like SAMS.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I would never try to do my VM across Samba. It's too chatty. NFS is too chatty. I considered doing iSCSI, but that's a pain in the posterior to set up and maintain. So NFS is real simple. I can do some other things, and the way I do backups, I use rsync, and that can see the base file system instead of the NFS shares and do backup more easily. So these ended up, each one has 4 1-terabyte drives on it to give me 2.8 terabytes of pretty darn fast storage. Oh, it's also 2.5 gig Ethernet.
So some flavor of RAID that you've got them.
Mm-hmm.
Some flavor of RAID.
Yeah, I'm running RAID 5 across 4 drives. So I get almost 3T. It loses a little bit, but not much. And because it's Debian, I can run rsync on it. So I can have this push changes to the 40 terabyte NAS that backs everything up, so, which is actually closer to 30 terabytes of storage. And I haven't done this yet, but it's almost ready. I have one of these that's going to go to the kid's house, and it will back up some folders off of the 30 terabyte NAS that are backups of email and pictures and old tax records and stuff.
So that's your offsite storage then.
Yep.
So how are you doing that? Tail scale or
yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So that's what I want to set up some stuff for me to learn that so I can do my NASs.
Tail scale
off is, the, so I can do that.
Tail scale is surprisingly easy to set up. It is there we go. These are my tail scale nodes. I seem to have broken something because this is Nook and it says it's last. Oh, I reloaded it. Duh. It doesn't actually have tail scale on it.
Oh.
So this is now Nook-1. Oh, I got to get rid of that one. Okay, so this one's online. My Mint Craptop is online. Mom's router is online and Tiny is online. Tiny is a VM that I allow other people to log into on my home network that I'm kind of cautious with. Router and Mom's, if Mom pisses me off, I can shut her router down for an hour. I would never do that.
The way you and Ains were talking last night, I don't know about that.
The Mint Craptop, that is that Evolve 3 thing that I brought in a few times.
Yeah, I got another one of those now.
Yeah, I lost one. The last time I had it was over a year ago here. And I've asked up there. I have not seen it in over a year.
And it's one of these?
Yeah. A Maestro of all three. I finally decided, well, screw it. It's gone. Because it was named after a rock.
After a rock or yeah, the rock?
Barrel. Oh, wait. Here it is. Wait, no, that can't be right. 90 days. It was up to 300 and something odd days. Maybe Roxy was it. Yeah, that one was Roxy. What's Barrel? But almost a year.
So it's a hot little computer, is it?
Mm.
It's named Roxy.
It runs pretty cool, all things considered. but like from here, I want to log into the Mint Craptop. I can get the IP address, or I've got it all set up in my configs. What do I call that thing? So now I'm on the Evo that's sitting on the arm of our couch at home.
Okay, so Tailscale just gives you access to everything.
Tailscale can be set up in a few ways. You can have a thing set up as an endpoint, which all of my things are.
And that's a VPN that they're all set up on?
Yes.
100?
Yep.
Okay.
Or you can set up a thing to be an exit node.
An exit node?
Yeah. So you can't SSH to the thing, but you can SSH to things that, you can't SSH to the thing, but you're going through Tailscale to get to its real IP address, not to its VPN IP address. assuming that it has SSH enabled, let's say it's a Raspberry Pi, mm-hmm. and I put my Raspberry Pi at your house, uh-huh. and it's a Tailscale exit node, I can now use my exit node to get to your TV tuner or to use your router as an endpoint for a second layer of VPN.
Which would then give you access to my entire network?
Yes. Yeah, if it's an exit node, it can get to anything that the node is sitting in that subnet.
You'd have to program, it has to run two IP addresses.
It
one
does.
That's your side and the one that's my side.
Yeah, and this does as well. So
with just, is it just a
so
line?
I have.
Well, the Evolves just have a Wi-Fi, so it's both IP addresses on the one Wi-Fi.
So on my, so the SIM card isn't even in it, so that doesn't have an IP address.
Right.
This is my wireless address, and it's 192.168.1.180. Then there's a whole bunch of stuff that I have no idea why that's in there. It shouldn't be. And here's my Tailscale interface at 100. So anything that's running Tailscale has multiple IP addresses.
Right. I mean, I know that you can assign multiple IP, even in Windows, you can assign multiple IP mm-hmm. addresses to one NIC.
Mm-hmm. Well, this isn't to one NIC.
Well,
I have
the Wi-Fi. My
Wi-Fi has one IP address. My Tailscale interface has one IP address.
That's a software.
Yes, it's still an interface. It's
okay,
just not a physical interface. It's a logical interface.
Got it.
So,
all right. So, if you wanted to automate all of your, like, let's say, duplicating your true NAS from one to another.
Mm-hmm. I run Tailscale on both devices,
uh-huh.
and I tell them to communicate to each other through the Tailscale IP address. That's it. That's
okay. That's what Tailscale does. It mm-hmm. just makes them connect to each other.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it would be doing the backup also.
Tailscale is just a network interface.
Okay,
it's a wire. It doesn't do a backup. I have to run.
You have to run RSync or something else.
Yep.
To actually make that work.
And I closed it.
All right, that gives me a direction that I want
to
start.
If you want to see how I do backups,
so Tailscale is really just a software network device.
Yes, yes. And I've talked about this a lot. This is how I do backup with rsync. It works very, very well.
Thank you. BYL.org.
I can send you a link to it.
Please.
So I've got a backup folder with these files in it. That backup folder is on another drive. This is running on this Nook as well. It's a separate thing, but I have backup folders on many devices. So SDA is a physical spinning drive mounted as backup. I'm using 22% of it, and it's a 2 terabyte drive. SDB is, oh, that Ventoux thing, we can get rid of that. I forgot all about.
This is the rest.
Enable operations. Okay. Oh, I guess it, never mind. Should be good. There. Here's the drive.
Okay.
Right.
Yep.
Now,
just to boot off of it, it's got like four or five different ISO files on it. Linux Mint is one of them.
Uh-huh.
It's also got System Rescue CD and something else. And you just use the arrow keys to select what you want it to boot from.
Okay. That's all I got to do. I don't have to copy this to the hard drive. Nope.
Well, I mean, you boot from it, and then you're in the Mint installer, and it says, what do you want to do now?
Okay.
It's a bunch of CDs on a thumb drive. It's like booting a CD.
Okay.
And this is Ventoy 1.12, the updated two levels since last meeting.
Okay. I haven't updated any one.
I tend to pretty frequently, though we really ought to test and verify that works.
I've got two with me right now.
Yeah.
You can have one in my pocket?
Yeah. I have a few.
Can you help me with this?
Spinning drive.
Is that a Ventoy in your pocket, or are you happy to see it?
With a label of backup, mounted as /backup. This one we ignore. This is my boot drive. It's encrypted. My backup is also encrypted. So if somebody gets hold of this thing and it's powered off, they get nothing.
Unless so they can copy the files, but they're encrypted on the device. They're copying the encrypted file.
No. We're on the device decrypted. The backup is decrypted. It uses the same key.
Okay.
And it's backing up two files. It makes a backup every night at 2:15.
Okay.
Every time it does a backup, it leaves this. So there were 677 files changed between the backup last night and the backup the night before.
Okay.
It took it a minute and 35 seconds to do that backup. That's a terabyte drive that it did a backup of in a minute and 35 seconds because there were only 600 files changed. It ignores things that aren't changed.
Right.
It removed the backup from March 16th and created a backup for, for April
25th. Can I do this straight with Windows also?
Sure, if you can figure out how to get Windows to run rSync natively. And
so Windows, the answer is no.
And Windows understands a file system with hard links. So that's the magic of this thing.
So if I have, so I got like 5 terabytes at one place that I want to back up.
Mm-hmm.
So if I synchronize the Windows machine that's running that, which is a big dental X-ray thing, to a 5 terabyte host,
mm-hmm.
that I can sync off site directly to one like at my house.
Yes.
And just have those 5 terabytes always up to date with what changes have been on this.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I want to do.
The way I would do that is have the remote backup running Tailscale, share an NFS export, and map it on the local backup running Tailscale. So now you don't need to open any ports between things, and if IP addresses change, you're good. And then I would rsync to that NFS export. Because then it's... Well, here's your Windows machine or whatever. Yeah. You're copying that to your local backup. And then I would have the local backup back up to the NFS mount. So it's actually going...
I've lost the NFS mount.
Huh?
I've lost with NFS.
So the remote backup has an NFS share and Tailscale. The local backup has Tailscale and mounts this NFS mount.
Okay.
So you have a
so copy, this one's pushing to here.
Right. So and you have a copy of your Windows data on the local, and you are synced to the NFS mount, and it has multiple backups. It would do
yeah.
what this does.
Well, I was looking to use like free file sync on the Windows machine to back up to here.
Okay.
Just copy the files directly to an SMB.
Pretty sure you can just get free file sync for Linux. But it isn't going
to... Oh, and have it pull from the Windows machine? Yeah, yeah, I guess I could.
It isn't going to give you these backups in time. If I discover that, crap, February or March 25th, a month ago, I broke something. Well, if I've only got one backup, I've got a perfect backup of a broken thing.
Right.
This, every one of those backups is a point in time. I can go back to this folder and copy files out of there that existed only at that point in time. If it only existed on March 24th, if it was there for one backup, I've got it. If it didn't, if it wasn't there the 23rd, I put it there the 24th and deleted it the 25th, I can go to the 24th and get that file.
With RSync?
Yes.
So like Git almost.
Hmm?
It's a lot like Git.
Yes, except Git. Git has a physical representation of every change. This doesn't really. And it really does. This uses Linux file system's hard linking ability to, if the data hasn't changed, just link to the last data.
I see. Okay, got it.
And if it has changed, create a new file.
So Git doesn't do that. It just says, if something's changed, I'm representing you. If it didn't, I'm not representing.
Yes.
Okay.
So these are true incrementals.
Yes. They're not. No. They're not incrementals. Every one of these folders is a snapshot in time. There's no original full backup and then incrementals. That's kind of the way it works. But I don't have, if I want to get to this point, I can copy a folder. I don't need to copy the original and then everything that's happened since. Every single folder is a complete image of the drive at the time the snapshot was taken.
Well, how many freaking terabytes is that going to take?
About 110%. Because it isn't creating files for everything. It originally created 100% of the files. Now, the second day, if the files haven't changed between the two, it increments the file link. It links to the inode with a different name. So the data exists once, but it has two file names. One file name being slash backup slash 02 root 2026 03 17 slash etsy slash fstab.
Okay.
That physical file, my FS tab, exists one time, and it's called that through the...
So why are you describing it as incremental?
But it isn't. Because with an incremental, you have a one-time backup, and if you need to get back to... If you've got a month's worth of backups, you've got 1 month old base...
Yeah.
And then you've got 30 incrementals. If you need to get to 2 days ago, you need to load your base, and then you need to load every single incremental in between and stop 2 days ago.
Oh, it's a linked list.
Right.
Okay.
This yeah. isn't that. Here.
But that's, I mean, most of the backup software will do that for you. You don't have to manually load each folder.
That depends on where your backups are. If you're putting them on tape, you're sitting in front of that tape drive a lot.
Because it's got to read the...
It has to read everything in between.
Yeah.
Make sure you're hourly if you use it that way.
Yeah.
No. Did you say that out loud?
But like Veeam is something that runs on, is a Windows backup system. And the community edition is free if you need to play with it or if anyone wants to play with it. But it backs up once. It does all the incrementals. I mean, and there are people that have years worth of incrementals.
Uh-huh.
And you say, and you say, I need this date. It will do all of that. It's all in the same repository.
Let's hope that one of your incrementals somewhere back 8 months ago didn't get broken.
Yeah, I try to update. I tell it to fix itself.
And yeah, you can tell it.
Like once a month.
Oh, if it's a double wait list, I guess.
Yeah. This doesn't do that. This just uses the Linux file system for the magic that the Linux file system can do. So, yeah, bad choice. So my bash history file from, what day am I in? April 20th was unique. I must have logged in that day and changed something because this column is a one. See how these are twos and 13s and 12s?
Those are number of days without change?
Correct.
Okay.
And I don't need any special software to see that that file changed that day. And there was a backup of it that day. That's a one. There's only one copy of it. That is what that file was on that day. I can do that for every single file for that day.
Okay.
It is an amazing way to do backups. And it is surprisingly easy.
And you're going to send us a link, right?
Sure. There's a lot of stuff on my wiki.cyli.org, C-Y-L-I, C-Y-L-I.org. The wiki has a lot of stuff, and it has a really good search. If you search for rsync, this is the only page that comes up.
Oh, cyli.org is you?
Yeah.
Oh, what does cyli stand for?
Just cyli.
Okay. It stands for what?
It's just cyli. Yeah, this is running off of a VM at my house, running on XCPNG, and has been for a long time. This is actually, let's see.
Okay, so I need to search for backup on cyli.org then?
Yep, just saying.
Was it?
What was it? Oh. So this is what looking at the machine shows up as on Tiny. It's a VM. It knows it's a Zen thing. Doesn't give a serial number because it doesn't really have one. But yeah, it's... Come on. So, AMD Ryzen Threadripper 1920. Somebody wants to look up the 1920X to see how old that is. That's an early Threadripper. This thing has six cores of it out of 24-ish, maybe more, I don't know. But yeah, it's a handy thing. Anyway. So this is what's in the backup directory. System backup is an application, and a snapshot is an application. And then it's got folders for what I want backups of and conf files for what I want backups of. All right.
2017.
I got it in 18, I guess.
That 2017 does not sound old to me.
It's been running since 2017.
Oh, this tiny has?
No, the physical hardware.
Oh.
I've run lots of stuff through it. It's a single machine with three spinning drives in RAID 5 and two NVMe in RAID 1 and a pretty decent video card that, I mean, just does okay.
I got a motherboard that just failed that had an FX. But free Threadripper, but it had been running for that long too.
Yeah.
The motherboard finally failed. I can't get it to boot. I don't know what, and I'm not going to do the board analytics. I just took it out, kept it. I'll probably get another board that'll fit that processor someday, but.
Yeah. So rsync calls system backup. System backup makes sure it's running as root, moves to where the backups are, looks for script files that end in .conf, and it runs snapshot with the script file. And it does that for all conf files. This is what one of the conf files looks like. Where are we putting the backup at? What are we backing up? It has to end in a slash. Where to put a file list? I can probably take this out of here, but whatever. Where do we do a summary? What don't we back up? And how many backups do you want to take? That's it.
What happens at 10 in this case? Or at 11 in this case?
So I have 10 existing snapshots. It starts up. It makes an 11th. When that successfully finishes, it deletes the oldest one. It keeps a physical list of files.
But because all of the files are pointing to the same base on the snapshot, same original blocks, you don't need the first one or the second one.
They're all.
So it's not delta. Yeah, that's where the not deltas comes in.
Yeah. So the way that Unix deletes a file is it deletes the link count. And if the link count is now zero, the kernel can delete the data.
Or from it use that sector when it needs to. Right?
Yes. Yeah.
So it doesn't necessarily delete it until it's.
Until it discusses it
needs the resources. Yeah. Okay.
So this file, log.txt, that exists for 27 copies of data.
Okay.
The physical data exists once on the drive, and there are 27 different names pointing at it. And when I delete a thing, I delete the name. And the link count goes down by one.
Oh, that's.
What do you mean the link? You just lost me.
If I delete log.txt,
okay.
The next time I do a backup, this goes to 26.
Because there's only 26 still in the system that
right.
reference that.
Right.
So once that gets to zero,
the name of a file is a pointer to the inode that stores the data.
Yeah. Does a pointer count as a
okay?
Pointer?
So when you have
so count a point.
When you have that one that you had up earlier,
that only existed for one day.
Right, but if that was a deleted file, that means it's only got one more day to live in your backup.
Correct. That means
and so, and then it gets deleted out of the original seed.
Yes. Yeah, after 30 days, I'm keeping 30 days worth of backups. And every day I delete one. If it was only in that 31st day when this one successfully completes, this day's worth of backups gets deleted. Its link count just went to zero. The inode that held that data is now released, and the kernel can use that space if it chooses to at some point in the future. But
it's really elegant.
It is.
I'm starting to get a handle on this now.
So
file handle is different, right?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yes, it is. So the inode that holds this data is this number here. And I can physically just read that inode. I can delete this to zero. I can still physically read that inode. It may contain the data I'm looking for. It may not. But I don't have to worry about those things because I have
a label. I don't understand what an inode is yet.
So an inode is a thing on the drive that contains data.
A block?
No. An inode can cover multiple blocks.
I think of that as a file.
It is.
The inode is the physical portion that is the file.
The inode is where on the drive the data exists. The name, the file name, is an entry in a table that says, right, if you want this...
That's your partition table, essentially.
Sort of. This is XFS. I have like 25 partition tables on this thing.
Okay.
I told it to create extras, and I also formatted this drive with extra inodes, but I didn't need to.
You're losing me now, so let's get back to what it is.
So, God, I wish this wasn't about here.
Move it up. Yep, there you go.
Yeah, but I can't get rid of it.
No.
There used to be a way to minimize it and make it go away, and now it just moves. So DF-H, disk-free in human-readable terms.
Okay.
So for DF-H, this drive. So I'm on...
It's a 2-terabyte drive, or it's a 2-terabyte partition.
Right. With 1.4 terabyte available, I'm using 24%.
Okay.
DF-H-I is inode information. I'm only using 4% of my inodes. I have 117 million. I'm using 3.7. I have 3.7 million file names on this drive because so many file names are linked to so many chunks of data.
The same chunks of data.
Yes. Yeah, in this folder, I have 27 names linked to one block of data. Well, I'm sorry, not a block, one
inode of data.
Collection
of data, yeah.
Now, the inode somewhere in the guts of the file system is in the old days of disk 3 as sectors or blocks, somewhere there's a collection of what the actual sectors are, right? The inode just unifies them all.
Yes. In DOS, you had a file allocation table, mm-hmm. FAT.
Right.
And it pointed to the block that a file began on. The end of that block had a pointer to the next block.
Yeah.
Had a pointer to the next,
right.
to the next.
And they did the same thing.
It was a
TXT4.
They do the same thing, but they don't do it in the same place.
Okay.
There is a table that says this block of data uses this list of inodes. I incorrectly said that a file exists in one inode, and that's not true. An inode is
a physical space
determination of space. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
a certain cylinder and head and sector and
yes. So it's a neat thing.
I mean, understanding the underlying portion of that helps you to understand what it's doing.
Yep. So this may keep 10 copies, whatever, a week and a half. This script, this is read into this script here down about, here we go. If it didn't get a script listing, exit, otherwise, dot and $1, read in the first argument to this command. And all of his reading are variables. It's not doing anything. It just fills in the variable snapshot RW, snap dir, file list summary excludes a number of snaps. And then this goes through and builds everything else it needs. This is used to build the summary that it creates. And this is what does pretty much every, oh, wait a minute, there's a little bit more up here. It's been a while since I played with this, sorry. I need to update this because this deletes the oldest first, and it, I'm not doing that anymore. Now I'm deleting the oldest after a successful one.
All right, so but I can become...
This will work.
All right, so for me, if I want to try this out and create a proof of concept,
mm-hmm.
I can take two Raspberry Pi 4s, each with a terabyte spinning hard drive,
mm-hmm.
and have them do it across each other, and then maybe even take one of them and have them try to back up something on a Windows machine,
mm-hmm.
and create a whole small... proof of concept setup.
Yes. These are the arguments to rsync, archive, verbose, delete excluded, use numeric IDs, give it a 1 second modification window,
okay.
Dash dash hard links. Got to have that in there. It all breaks if that one's gone. Don't cross file system boundaries. Use advanced ACLs. Whatever ACLs are. Use extended
acronyms. You're IPTICPing me.
Okay. Sorry.
Yeah, too many acronyms. That explodes.
Well, none of these were acronyms. ACLs are extra attributes.
List.
That was anterior cruciate ligament.
Anterior.
Yeah, anterior cruciate
ligament. It means different things on Linux than it does Windows.
Okay.
But it's
the same. I live in mostly Windows world.
I'm sorry. It's the same effective thing.
Well, I'm trying to learn this stuff.
The dash dash X attributes are Linux only attributes. I don't think I'm not using those.
No, if I learned this a long time ago, I'd probably make more money.
I'm not. So if I had X attributes enabled on this drive, there would be a period after each one of these, which means that somewhere there's a lookup table for this particular file of who's allowed to have permission and maybe what time. And
that's what the X attribute
does.
Yeah.
Let me see if I've got it on.
It's an access. It's an access.
Access control stuff. Yeah. Yeah, and I don't hear either. So on this particular machine, I could drop both of those.
On the access control list, then.
That's what it is in Windows.
The exclude from excludes, it got that from the configuration file. Everything has something you don't want to back up. And I have been adding to my list of don't back this crap up for a long time. And it's just a file. Right? There's not a file here. Where am I at? Yeah. What? Since I... This one has a slightly different script. I've only got one excludes file, and I've got it in backup. If I can spell right, there we go. You can use wildcards. So don't back up anything in varlib docker. Don't back up anything in var run cup cert. Don't back up anything in varlib VMware. Don't back up anything in backup.
Well,
you don't want to backup because
backup recursive.
Yeah, now you're looking at a mirror. Bad things happen. Ask me how I know. Ask why that's the first line.
Stack Overflow.
Yeah.
Did we learn that one the hard way?
Yes, we did.
Yeah. What about the ones that lead with an asterisk?
So no matter where it's at, if something is in a cache folder that starts with a capital C, whether it's in a home directory or var or wherever, doesn't matter.
Okay. But it has to be in a cache directory that starts with a capital C.
Right. Yeah. It, as in everything Linux, everything is case sensitive. Don't ever back up lost and found. This GVFS, what was that? That had something to do with GNOME virtual file systems that were infinitely large inside of a 10K file. It was like, what the hell? It got to one of those and it spent 4 hours doing a backup and just hung. These excludes are learned over a long time.
Are those in your wiki?
They are. 99% certain.
To search to find this information on your wiki, I search the word backup. Do I need a capital B in my search term?
No.
Or searches are not case sensitive?
Searches are not case sensitive in the wiki itself. There's a little search bar up here at the top that now you can't see because I moved this up.
Yes, I can see the lower left. Yep.
DocuWiki is amazing. It does some neat stuff.
All right. I don't want to take up everyone's time.
No, this is good. What time is it?
12:10.
Oh, well, we got
it. No one's come to pick us out yet.
Yeah, well, because I technically got the room till 12:30. Anyway, lots of arguments for the rsync command, and then here's where we actually do the rsync. Rsync using the arguments from the directory you're snapping up to the current directory and save everything that you export or everything that writes to the screen to file list. That's it. That's your backup. That's what actually does everything. You can type all of this out by hand and get the exact same effect. That's what scripting is all about.
Okay. That's a great example for what scripting is all about, and for those that have never learned.
Add today's snapshot to the list, remove the oldest, write out the summary list. If you interrupt this while it's running, it breaks your list of things to delete. And it's kind of stupid. It won't fix that because the way that it determines what to back up and what to delete is all in this backups file, which is it's impressive in its complexity.
So if you have a power outage at 2:16, are you just screwed?
I don't have a backup for that day. I go in and I delete what it got started with, which is fine because
the rest of them are fine.
Yes.
Oh, okay. That's not what I heard.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Okay.
No, you're not screwed, but you have one bad backup that could affect future backups.
Why could it affect? I now I'm lost.
Because of the way that it
because it's only one day. Because it's not that one day. It needs that day to know the changes.
It's not one day. It's something that isn't one day. I don't know what it is, but what you do is you go in and you delete it. Just delete it.
That day.
As soon as you can.
Okay.
Okay, since it was down, can we manually start? I want to have the backup for today done. Can I manually
absolutely
go for it?
And because it takes 10 or 15 minutes at the most on this.
Go make your coffee.
Yep.
And quick. And if I was, say, on a long weekend away, and I came back and I found one of them got interrupted, I would have to delete that one and all subsequent ones in order for it to catch up to back where it was good. To prevent having a problem down the road.
No, maybe. Probably. In all probability, you'll be fine. And everything will just work itself out when it makes a successful future backups. I haven't had that be an issue.
Oh, because they'll fall off in 10 or 30 days?
Yes. Where I have had it be an issue is this backups file. Okay, all it is a list of text pointing to where the backup is. If you get a bad number in here, let's say your limit is 30 days, and you somehow ended up with 34 days worth of backups listed in here, it's going to always have 34 days because it removes the oldest and it puts in the newest. It doesn't actually verify that those are 30 good backups. It just says, get rid of the oldest one, create a new one. So this text file may need editing if you lose power. It's a flat text file. Okay. It ain't hard. And if you...
But if I have it 30 days and I lost one of these and I need to edit this, so now there's 31 days in it, that's going to be 31 days forever. Who cares?
Right. Usually.
So now you have 31 days of backup, even though you thought you only had 30.
Well, but the problem is that it deletes the 30th thing. If there are 31 in the list, that means the first one always stays, never gets deleted.
Oh, it counts back.
Because it's always there.
I have never had this fail enough for me to go in and actually change the logic to deal with that. And I'm not going to do that at this point in time. Okay. This has worked successfully on probably 50 or 60 people's machines at this point for years. I started doing this in like 2010. As soon as rsync got the ability to back up using an inode list, I started doing this. This has gone through 20 of my own servers and little pieces of crap like this. And honestly, I don't need it that often. But there's one more thing that I'll...
It's the one time you need it that you're glad you had it for the last 10 years.
Oh, yeah. And here's the one other place where this really does a neat thing. I can make the backups folder read-only for root. So nobody can see into it. I can make it an NFS share that can only be mounted read-only. But now, because it's an NFS share, I can mount it in /home. So if you bork something in your home directory, you open up your file browser, you go back to backup. Now you have a read-only file system of all of your backups, and your users can go in and find a file that they borked 20 days ago. At this point in time,
it was right. I don't have users that are that bright.
It's just looking at a file system. It really...
They're not that bright.
And you get to charge them for restoring that file.
Yes, I do that now. I get to. With the systems that I do have. Or they have to accept the fact it's like, nope, it's not there anymore. Too bad.
Yeah, I've told people that.
And actually, I remember it was an early ransomware issue. And he had a whole bunch of stuff that was on a Windows share. It was snapshotted in his laptop, and I was able to go into the snapshots and recover 94% of his files out of the NTFS snapshots. The ones that I couldn't recover were because he had file tree names that were greater than 256 characters long. He had nested so many things over the years. The ones that were beyond that.
Oh,
256 character limit unrecoverable.
He probably didn't know that.
No, he didn't.
Even if he hadn't gotten the malware, he wouldn't have been able to recover that, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I've lost data like that.
So here's...
What's it?
I'm in the back of...
To recover some of it, I had to start changing path names
yeah, sure.
to
path
A,
names.
B,
yeah.
C,
I've done that.
And then I'm able to get to what I need to get to.
I've done that.
So here's a listing for my bash history. For 20 days, it didn't change. Apparently, I didn't log in for a while. And then these 2 days, it didn't change. 2 days, 1 day, 3 days, 1 day, 2 days.
Yeah. That's my dad's birthday.
It is surprisingly usable and user friendly if you're comfortable playing with LS.
I'm learning to be.
It is handy.
Can you use your MC Commander or no? Midnight.
Yeah. Yep.
Can you use MC Commander on this file structure?
It's just a file system. It's just Linux files.
I know, it's visually easy.
That all have their original Linux permissions. So I'm a normal user. If I go into Etsy, I hopefully can't delete. Oops, not bad. Hopefully can't delete my Image Magic directory. Nope. Permission denied. So all of the normal permissions exist. It is handy. Amazingly handy.
All right. I think I'm going to have to go my proof of concept route for me to figure and learn
so
this. But this is
all of the files,
definitely something I want to try.
All of the files are here. Another added benefit is if you click here, it downloads the file because of the way that the wiki works. All of these are just downloadable files. It's handy. There's the snapshot. Here's my excludes file. Here's what it looks like when it's in use.
Yeah, ultimately, I want to be able to just download a particular directory. Back up a particular directory that's like 5 terabytes in size.
Mm-hmm.
And be able to recover it.
What sort of files are in it?
There are image files from a 3D X-ray machine.
Okay. Yeah, should be doable.
Because the vendor of this product... they can rebuild a new machine, mm-hmm. a new computer with everything they need on it with just that one PData folder. So everything's in PData that they need for me, and so I lifted all of that out. I built a new machine, a replacement server.